Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
I'm Farai Chidea, and this is One with Farai, a show about how visionaries integrate life, work, and passion. It's been raining like hell in LA for weeks. Well, actually, in hell, it's raining blood. And as bad as modern hell may be, there's something worse: old gods who are threatening to take over the earth. That's the premise of the latest installment of the Sandman Slim series of supernatural noir by author Richard Kadrey. I'm thrilled to welcome the New York Times bestseller to our program. Richard Kadrey's books have been compared to the Goodfellas of horror. Protagonist James Stark, a.k.a. Sandman Slim, is an enforcer and private eye who works at times for both God and Lucifer, who are portrayed more like mafia dons in need of therapy than traditional deities. Kadrey's books are naughty but not over the top, laugh out loud funny, and optioned by the De Laurentiis Film Company. His sixth Sandman Slim book, The Getaway God, was recently released. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. So your books are just made for binge reading. Now, that said, some people listening to this will never have read any of the Sandman Slim series, and some may have read them all. So recognizing that, what do we need to know about Stark, a.k.a. Sandman Slim?
Well, James Stark is a magician, and magician's the word I chose to use instead of wizard or warlock or something like that. He's part of a subset of people called the Sub Rosa, who are basically magical human beings with extraordinary powers. Stark is pretty estranged from this group. He's less Harry Potter and more Iggy Pop in his attitude toward things. And the setup basically for the series is Stark escaping from hell, where he was sent unjustly by another wizard who was looking for power. And I often describe it as Stark as the hitman from hell, which he ends up becoming in hell, a killer, and finds out he's very good at it. He's forced into it by the people who run hell. He's thrown into an arena because they're kind of bored with him. He's the first and only human being who was alive in hell. And for a while, he's a novelty. Later, he's just a bore. And while he's down there, he discovers he's really good at killing things and that he's very hard to kill. And so when he escapes from hell, he comes back looking for the people who sent him to hell and for the people who killed his girlfriend, which is his major motivation for coming back to Earth.
Now, you've written several other books, but this series really caught fire. So what made you keep writing when audiences didn't necessarily get you or at least didn't pay you?
Yeah, it was 20 years in the trenches without anybody really caring about anything I ever wrote. And I think you just do it because you're compelled to. I mean, there's a million other things you could do that's not writing, but I think Ursula Le Guin said it really well when she said, you know you're a writer when you're more miserable not writing than you are writing. So I think it's just something you do, and I tried to walk away from writing a number of times when things weren't going well, but I always ended up coming back to it, even when I wasn't being paid or being paid a pittance. I don't know, things just turned around for me when I decided to write Sandman Slim and really have a very hardcore attitude about it, where basically this is the story I was going to tell. I wasn't going to compromise it. And just threw the dice to see what happened, and I guess people liked him.
So you've called him the killer from hell, which he certainly is, but you have also made an entire character out of Los Angeles, which in your book exists both as a real Los Angeles and a sort of demonic analog to Los Angeles. And as someone who's lived in Los Angeles, it cracks me up to no end. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Los Angeles as a space of fiction for this series.
I love LA. A lot of people think I don't because of the way I portray it in the books, but I love LA because it's a very honest place. It's honest in its venality, and that's what I love about it. It's a company town, and show business is the company. Instead of a coal mining town, it's about show business. And it's because of that, it's very much a city of people on the prowl all the time, everyone looking for an edge, everyone looking for the next hit, the next thing that will put them ahead of somebody else. There's a ton of money. It's a very class-conscious society, so that's interesting to play with. And it's a sprawling metropolis without much of a central core or identity other than this weird place that's always sunny and full of desperate people trying to get, trying to further themselves. It's a city of ghosts. There are the people who made it and all the ghosts around them who didn't make it are trying to make it. And talented or not, will never make it. And that's why it's so interesting. And so, there's such pressure in the air in LA. There's so much want in the city. And it's fascinating to write about.
Well, I'm not giving away too much, and we don't have to go into it, but it's not always sunny in your version of L.A. in The Getaway God, and that is highly troubling to people who expect it to be so. You write these really vivid characters, and there's a theory about writing that all characters in novels are some form of the author. So I'm going to name a few of your characters and ask the ways in which you are like them, or if you don't believe the theory at all, we can just stop this right now.
No, go ahead. I mean, it's you're right. All writing, fictional or nonfiction, is partly autobiographical because no matter how much you try to remove it from yourself, it's always being filtered through your brain, your senses, your memories, your life story. So, yeah, I suppose I hadn't thought of it, but it's, I suppose all the characters are some have aspects of the author.
I'm going to name a whole bunch of characters. And to a certain extent, you don't have to go in deep, but you have to describe a little bit about who they are.
Sure, no problem.
Stark.
James Stark, how was he like me? I think Stark, the good parts of Stark are the fact he is loyal to the people he cares about. He has a sense of ethics, even though it's not always apparent. Maybe those are the parts of that I aspire to. Even though he's a killer, he is very careful about who he goes after. He's also a car thief, which I have in my past. But there's ethics around stealing cars, too. You never steal a Honda Civic from some poor slob who just works at a shoe store. You go for the big cars. You go for the Porsches. You go for the Bugattis. You know, a car that you know the owner has a lot of insurance on. So if you wreck it, they're covered.
In your past, was this for joyriding purposes, financial purposes, or both?
Both. That was a long time ago, by the way. So if any law enforcement's listening, that was a long time ago.
Statute of limitation has expired, folks.
Absolutely.
Candy.
Yeah, Candy's an interesting character. When I was creating the book, I didn't want to use a lot of stock mythological and horror characters. I didn't want vampires and werewolves running around. So I've tried to create my own pantheon of supernatural characters. What Candy is a group of women called Jades. And what Jades are, I wanted to come up with something that was even scarier than a vampire. So Jades are more like spiders than they are vampire bats. A Jade, if you're attacked by a Jade, they will essentially insert an enzyme into your system that liquefies you, and then they will sort of drink you the way a spider does its prey. But at the same time, the human aspects of Candy are, again, like Stark, extreme loyalty. And Candy, I think, is a version of Stark that's a little wilder than him. She's more intuitive. Stark, because he had to fight in the arena, is more calculating in how he approaches the world. Candy is a bit more of a wild girl and very emotional and very attached to the people she cares about and is very ferocious in protecting them.
And Stark is one of those people.
And Stark is definitely one of those people.
Let's talk about the fancy dressing, big spender Lucifer.
I love Lucifer. He's a fun character to write. I occasionally have taught writing classes, and I always tell students, basically, you know, if you can't write an interesting Lucifer, give up. I mean, there's so much history of that character and so much fun you can have with presenting him. There's something there for everybody to play with.
So how do you write?
I do a lot of planning for the books before I start them. I like to have something close to an outline for the whole book, knowing, of course, that as I start telling the story, the outline will change. That's, again, part of the process of trusting yourself. So I'll create kind of a story arc write for a while, realize something has changed, recreate a story arc. And I'll do that several times. And when I'm writing, because I have kind of a structure, kind of a plot worked out, I like to leave holes along the way. And that those are the areas of surprise I leave for myself, because I do, this is getting back to the unconscious. I know something will appear at certain points in the book. And I like to leave little holes for myself to see what fills in there and see how that affects the rest of the book. I'll also put things in the beginning of a book without knowing what they mean. And often the meaning will reveal itself later in the book. And if it doesn't, it's easy to take out. That's why books are so great. And my actual writing process, I hop back and forth. I work on the computer like everybody else. But a lot of the times to get a scene started, or if I'm stuck on something, I'll write by hand, pen in a notebook. And I can do that all day long sometimes. And I'll then take all that stuff that I've done by hand, and then I'll speak it into the computer using voice recognition, and then edit that.
Yeah, I also find that writing by hand, I write both fiction and nonfiction, so far mainly nonfiction. But with fiction especially, something about writing by hand, it just uses a different part of the brain for me. I mean, do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. There's something in that physicality that changes the way your brain works. And for me, anytime I'm stuck, writing by hand will always break through whatever stopping me.
So when you imagine what this could look like on the screen, I have to ask you this because it's been optioned, which doesn't mean it'll be a movie, but it's a very good sign.
Right.
Who do you want to play Stark?
I will never tell you that.
Because then the actor who does play Stark will be like, daggone it, Richard Cadry wanted blank.
No, it's a whole different reason. Basically, in the books themselves, I never describe Stark. All I say is that he's very pale. He's lean. His name is Slim. And he has a lot of scars. And that's it. I describe the other characters, but I left Stark a blank because I want readers to be able to create their own Stark. And I've heard dozens of different Starks at this point. My favorite one is someone thought Stark looked like Tom Waits, which is fine by me. It's not how I see Stark, but that one kind of cracked me up. And that's the same reason I won't name an actor, because if I name an actor, that will create an image of Stark in other people's heads. And I don't want to do that. I refuse to do that.
Well, based on Lean, we can rule out Vin Diesel, The Rock, a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't really rule in a lot of people.
No, it surprises me sometimes when people tell me that they think it's The Rock or Glenn Danzig or something. And it's like, you kind of want to tell them you should read that again because his name is Slim.
You describe your books as supernatural noir, and they are incredibly readable, and they have very literary stylings within them. How do you view yourself within that kind of spectrum of genre fiction and literary fiction, or do you not even buy into that?
Well, I definitely look at the books as genre books. I try to write them as well as I can, so I hope they read well. I hope they come across as somebody with some brains and actual interest in the topic. But when I started out writing these books, I had a very clear vision. People see books like this sort of supernatural noir, and they think, oh, this is a fantasy writer who just stuck a detective in there. And it's the opposite for me. Sandman Slim, the first novel, very specifically, and to a degree the rest, are based on American crime fiction. Writers like Jim Thompson, James M. Cain, Ross MacDonald. It's more that feel and that aesthetic. And then I then added some supernatural elements to an American crime story. So it was very much rooted in that realistic, gritty life in the streets, look at the world, rather than some, you know, magical tome in which you just stick a guy who runs around pretending to do detective stuff.
Well, I'm going to ask a very simple, light question. What is it like to be immortalized as an action figure? Cadry, the invincible wizard.
It's pretty cool to have your own action figure, intended or not. years ago, some of us wrote for a kind of a terrible cartoon called Black Star. Actually, I never wrote for that one. Sorry. Friends wrote for that one. And you start getting punchy after a while and you start using your friends' names. And one of the writers used my name. And a year or two later, when they started marketing toys from that cartoon series, lo and behold, Kadri was one of the action figures. So I ended up buying a lot of those and I gave one to my mom, which amused the hell out of her. It's one of the few things about my writing that genuinely made her happy, I think.
That's great. Well, I will say that if I was going to marry or date any one of your characters, it would be Vidocq.
He's a fun character to write.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's based on a real person. He's based on Eugène Vidocq, who was a French criminal at a certain point, reformed himself, and tried to also reform the French police system. At the time when Vidocq was around, if there was a crime, if there was a theft, if there was a burglary, the method of the French police was just to round up everyone that they thought might be a thief and beat a confession out of someone. And Vidocq, having been a real criminal, could take apart a crime and understand who would do or not do it. For instance, if it was a second floor jewelry heist, well, he knew certain people that the police had arrested would never do a crime like that. They'd never go to the second floor. They'd never steal jewelry. Basically, he invented forensics. He could take apart crimes, look at all the pieces, and figure out from them what's the most likely way this crime happened and who the evidence pointed to as the culprit. Vidocq helped create the Sûreté in France. So he's a really very interesting, very smart character. And I want to get more into his background in future books because I haven't been able to use Vidocq's history in a way I've wanted to yet.
Well, now I'm even more intrigued. But before I let you go, I would like you to play a little game that we call Exquisite, where a previous guest on One with Farai asks a question of the current one, and that would be you, the Invincible Wizard. So take a listen.
What groundbreaking thing would you do if you weren't resource or talent constrained?
All right, Richard, what do you say?
Groundbreaking. I don't know what groundbreaking thing. Boy, that's a really interesting question. I'd love to find some way to integrate film and prose writing together so that they could see if there was some way in real time they could play off each other. So to create something in a visual story medium and a prose story medium simultaneously, I mean, that's incredibly vague, but I think for me, there would be something interesting in that idea. And I'm not talking about some kind of choose-your-own-adventure thing. It would still be in control of the author. As you're creating your novel, you're also writing your own movie, and your movie might last 20 or 30 hours, the same time it takes to actually make it through a book.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. Sign me up, absolutely. And perhaps someone will listen who can help you prototype it. So that question, by the way, came from another New York Times bestselling author, Lalita Tatamy, whose new book is Citizen's Creek. But it's your turn to toss a question to the next person, who we won't tell you who it is, and you can ask them anything.
I believe in keeping around art that inspires me when I'm working, but I also find it useful to keep things around that I hate, to remind myself that at my worst moments that, like, well, if this slob can get published, I can get published again too. So what things do you keep around that you hate that might inspire you to keep going?
That's absolutely fascinating. And you will find out the answer to Richard's question on the next episode of One with Farai. Thanks for joining us, Richard.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Writer and photographer Richard Kadri is the author of the Sandman Slim supernatural noir series, latest of which is The Getaway God, as well as the young adult book Dead Set and the cyberpunk thriller Metrophage. You've been listening to One with Farai, a part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm your host and executive producer, Farai Chidea. This program is produced by Devin Maverick Robbins, and our theme music is by the band Betty. Catch our next show when I sit down with New York City Commissioner of Public Health, Dr. Mary Bassett, who who spent many years living in Zimbabwe, where she both taught and practiced medicine. We'll talk about the risks facing public health workers and some of the biggest issues facing our health today. Visit soundworks.org to find other podcasts as well as past episodes of One with Farai.
One with Farai is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.